Shalom, welcome to ASJTF. This is Chaim ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Vansir, Harav Meir Kahana, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, and Yosef ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I want to speak about two subjects. One, I want to speak about the new developments in Israel, because there are some new important developments. And second, I want to speak about new developments in the presidential campaign this week, because there are some new developments there too. First of all, in regard to Israel, the so-called Prime Minister of Israel, Bibi Netanyahu, is going to come to America to get on his hands and knees and beg the Muslim Jew hater Barack Hussein Obama and the other Jew hater John Kerry to increase so-called foreign aid to Israel, to make Israel even more artificially dependent on U.S. foreign aid. This is the worst thing that Netanyahu can be doing to Israel. The worst thing for Israel is to be artificially dependent on foreign aid. Lo, this is a nation that shall dwell alone and not be reckoned among the nations, it says in the Torah. Israel was meant to go it alone, and Israel is blessed by God when she is isolated and goes alone. Because when she gets foreign aid, even if she wins big victories or survives or does things miraculously, everybody says, well, it's because you got foreign aid from America. It's not because of God. It's because you got foreign aid. And so it's a chilul Hashem, it's a desecration of God's name for Israel to receive foreign aid. And so-called U.S. foreign aid enables anti-Israel, anti-Semitic presidents like Barack Hussein Obama to pressure Israel to commit national suicide. Netanyahu is deepening Israel's artificial dependence on foreign aid, deepening Israel's problems here, making them worse, even after he promised when he first became prime minister the first time in 1996. He came before the Congress as the newly elected prime minister 19 years ago, believe it or not. For 19 years we've been cursed with this so-called Prime Minister Netanyahu. 19 years off and on, he's been Prime Minister. But when he first came before the Congress in 1996, he promised to end U.S. foreign aid to Israel. He said he was going to wean Israel off of U.S. foreign aid. And he's done the opposite as Prime Minister. He's making Israel more and more dependent, which hurts Israel's economy and hurts Israel's military and hurts Israel's markets and hurts Israeli society. It is the worst thing that you can do for the Jewish state. And he says that he wants this extra foreign aid from Obama and Kerry, and is begging for this extra foreign aid to make up for the fact that Israel is willing to accept now a nuclearized Iran. That's in effect what he's saying. He's saying, okay, we had our differences over Iran, but you're allowing Iran in effect to build nuclear bombs here with this new agreement, and we're going to accept it. Just give us more foreign aid. This is the worst insanity humanly imaginable. So in other words, Israel's going to have the prospect of a nuclear holocaust hovering over 6 million Israeli Jews just so that they could get a little extra foreign aid from Obama and Kerry, the anti-Semites. This is Netanyahu's so-called foreign policy. What a coward. How un-Jewish. How disgusting. In every area, on every front, Netanyahu takes Israel in the wrong direction. He makes Israel more dependent on foreign aid rather than pushing Israeli independence, which is what Israel needs. You can't build a healthy society or a healthy economy or a healthy nation based on handouts. Nations that need handouts are unhealthy, sick nations. Nations that are independent. Nations that have vibrant, self-sufficient economies and vibrant, self-sufficient militaries. Those are strong countries. That's true for any country, even more so for Israel because of Israel's special destiny in the world. But Netanyahu doesn't believe in Israel's special destiny. Netanyahu doesn't believe in anything. And so he's pushing Israel in the wrong direction on every issue. He wants Israel to be more dependent on foreign aid. He's allowing Israel to accept Iran's nuclear bomb-making program, which creates a very real threat of a nuclear holocaust against the Jews in Israel, God forbid. He's freezing all Jewish building in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem while allowing the Arab Muslim Nazis to build like crazy all over Israel. So he's allowing the Arabs on the ground to win the war and to take over the Jewish homeland. He's allowing third world people, illegal aliens, to come flooding into Israel, never removes them, never throws them out, and is allowing them to come in and flood into Israel. so that Israel's Jewish majority is declining every year, and we're moving toward the day when you're not going to have a Jewish state anymore. You're going to have a state where the Jews are a minority in their own homeland, thanks to Netanyahu and his cowardly policies. On every front, he's taking Israel in the wrong direction. On every front. And of course, we all know that he's allowing Jews to get stabbed and killed and run over all over Israel, in every city in Israel, every day. There's no security in Israel. The education system brainwashes Jews to be self-hating. The news media are all evil, self-hating Jews in Israel. The Israeli Supreme Court are the worst type of Jewish anti-Semites, and Netanyahu allows them to control everything in Israel, won't even change. He vigorously opposes any attempt to change the selection process for judges, because right now, the judges select their own successors. So you have extreme left judges, all extreme left judges selecting other extreme left judges. It's just, it's unbelievable. It's absolutely, it's as if we had a Supreme Court here of Al Sharptons, and the Al Sharptons select new Al Sharptons when they're ready to go on the Supreme Court. That is the system you have in Israel, and Netanyahu will not allow any reform of that system. On every front, he is a disaster. On every front. Now, we've been next to the only voice telling the truth about this, that Israel should not get foreign aid, that the best thing for Israel is to cut off all foreign aid. Israel easily can do without the foreign aid, and would do much better without the foreign aid. Israel would be able to sell billions of dollars in weapons to countries all over the world. Israel has Jewish brain power and can create the most sophisticated weapon systems, and would become a giant in terms of technology and weapons and other manufacturing. A giant in that area, and would be prospering tremendously. And of course, Israel should not sell any weapons or technology that could endanger the Jewish state security. But there are certain things Israel could sell to countries like India, for instance, which would not hurt Israeli security. But Israel doesn't do that because the United States vetoes the vast majority of Israel's weapon sales, the vast majority of Israel's technology endeavors, because Israel has to get approval from the United States in exchange for this so-called foreign aid, which is poison. Poison for Israel's economy. Poison for Israel's military. Poison for Israel's technology. Poison for Israel's industries. And Netanyahu continues with these policies, and the people of Israel keep re-electing him and voting for him or the alternative. Only one leader in Israel that I've seen has spoken up about this. Of course, our movement has spoken up about this, and our late beloved leader, Harav Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Livracha, of course, Rabbi Kahana always spoke up about this. But there is one leader that has been speaking up about this, to his credit, and that's Moshe Feiglin. Moshe Feiglin, who was a member of the Israeli Knesset, the Israeli Parliament, and who has said that he plans to run in the next Knesset elections, he has said that Israel has to end the foreign aid, and he has taken the right stand, for instance, on Iran. He says that Israel should take care of the Iranian problem militarily and not be concerned about what Obama says. So Moshe Feiglin on those issues has actually been pretty good. So I have to say, and we have some differences with Moshe Feiglin on some other issues. There are some problems with Moshe Feiglin on some issues. I don't agree with him about legalizing marijuana, and I don't agree with him when he says, when he condemns, not only condemns the Jewish underground fighters in Tag Mechir, but says they should get the maximum penalty if this is what they're doing. I don't believe anybody should ever dare say that about fellow Jews who are fighting to save the Jewish people. I don't care whether you agree or disagree with their tactics. To say that about a fellow Jew is disgraceful. So that's a very strong problem I have with the statements he's made and the statements others have made. But on the issue of foreign aid, Moshe Feiglin is telling the truth. On the issue of the Iran nuclear threat, which is the threat of a nuclear holocaust, God forbid, Moshe Feiglin has been telling the truth. So on many issues, he's been good. I think he is the best that we have among the people that are currently there right now. In any event, and of course we will consider what to do, what our options are in terms of who to support in the next election. We'll consider all that when the time comes. In any event, the reality is that Israel is moving in the wrong direction, has terrible leadership, And JTF has been the only movement that for decades has been consistently telling the truth since the days of Rabbi Kahana. Rabbi Kahana was telling the truth, and then JTF came along as the successor to tell the truth to the people of Israel, and we're telling the truth. And it's really, really tragic that we don't reach all the people of Israel with our message, because if we did, I think a lot of Israeli Jews would agree with our message, if we could just reach all the people of Israel with that message. So that's the situation in Israel. And let's hope and pray to God that something can happen to turn this around. Let's hope maybe in the next Israeli Knesset election that somebody good or a voice of decency or sanity gets in there. Let's hope. And let's hope we can influence people and start waking people up. JTF with our Hebrew videos and our campaign. Let's hope we can have some sort of effect. Because right now Israel is definitely moving in a very, very dangerous direction. And we have to reverse course, and we have to wake people up fast. Here in the United States, we've been very involved in the presidential election supporting Ted Cruz, because he's the one guy who has been saying the right thing on Iran and who has promised to take care of the Iranian nuclear threat, which is the biggest national security threat Israel faces right now. It's a threat of literally a Holocaust, God forbid. And he's promised to take care of that, and he's promised not to pressure Israel on settlements and on other issues. So we believe and are convinced that he's the best candidate for Israel and for America. And so we've been deeply involved in supporting his candidacy. This week, we saw new developments in that front. But, you know, I have to say, there's going to be a debate this Tuesday. We're filming the show on November 8th, 2015. The election is November 8th, 2016, so this is exactly, the day we're filming the show is exactly 1 year before Election Day of 2016, exactly 1 year to go until Election Day. But of course, before we get to Election Day, we've got very important contests coming up to decide who's going to be the Republican nominee, the first contest being on February 1st of next year in Iowa. That's just a little bit over 2.5 months from now. We've got the first voting begins in Iowa. Donald Trump and Ben Carson continue to sit on top in terms of the polls. They continue to be in the lead. And this is something that frustrates me tremendously, the unbelievable stupidity of the American people and the stupidity of Republican voters and the stupidity of so-called conservatives and the phoniness of so-called conservative websites who promote and defend Trump and Carson, who are anything but conservative. Who are both disastrous, both a joke and a farce, and both of them would lose disastrously to Hillary Clinton. In any event, the problem, and I don't think Ben Carson can get the Republican nomination. I don't think he would get the nomination. They're not going to nominate a joke like this, and he is a joke. But believe it or not, he could win in Iowa, and that means he could block Ted Cruz. If he wins in Iowa, he's blocking Ted Cruz's path to the nomination, because Ted Cruz needs Iowa and needs South Carolina. He needs some of these early conservative evangelical states in order to get the momentum to get the nomination. Otherwise, Ted Cruz is not going to get the nomination, God forbid. So the one thing that Ben Carson, the friend of Al Sharpton, is doing, and he has said that his goal is the same as Al Sharpton's goal. He went up to Harlem. And this is this year he did this. He went up to Harlem and embraced Al Sharpton and praised Al Sharpton, and Al Sharpton praised him, and he spoke at Al Sharpton's vicious, racist, anti-Semitic headquarters. And he said his goal was the same as Al Sharpton's goal. This is the type of scum that the Republicans and evangelicals and conservatives and Iowa voters, they love him. He's so likable. He's so wonderful. What an inspiring story he has. Now we learn this week that his whole story is a lie. He made the whole thing up. By the way, I knew that this was all baloney, that his whole story was a lie. I mean, it's so obvious this guy's a con man. Even though it's obvious that he made this up, even though the events that he described did not take place, even though it is so obvious, I mean, you put the pieces of the puzzle together, story after story after story, nothing adds up. Nothing adds up in what he says, in all of his stories. But still, because all he has to do is say, well, the news media is saying this about me, and the dumb Republicans and dumb conservatives, all they have to do is hear this, and so they immediately turn their anger toward the news media and ignore the fact, And the media are liars and are evil people. There's no question about that. But they ignore the fact that, still, factually speaking, Ben Carson is a liar. He's making all of this up. And he's completely phony on all these issues as well. That's also all a lie and a bluff. He's not a conservative on any of these issues. He supports amnesty. He supports Al Sharpton. He supports black racists. His campaign advisor, Armstrong Williams, who was also his business manager, praises Louis Farrakhan and supports Louis Farrakhan and says the taxpayer should be supporting Louis Farrakhan. I mean, you got to be a fool to be taken in by this con job. And he's completely in over his head, has no idea what the hell he's talking about, and he becomes the front runner, and Donald Trump is the front runner. Another one, Donald Trump. Donald Trump, who 65 out of his 70 years, he's a 70-year-old guy, 65 out of the 70 years, he was an open left-wing Democrat. He was an open leftist. And now, he still lets it out, and you see that he's still a leftist on the issues. He still supports the positions he's taken all his life. What are the positions he took all his life? Supported abortion, supported affirmative action discrimination against whites and against Asians and against Jews, supported massive tax increases, huge tax increases that he said should be imposed. I mean, I could go on issue after issue of supports a complete socialist takeover of the healthcare system, even worse than Obamacare. He wants a single-payer system, which he said in the first debate this summer. He said it works well. It works well in Canada and Scotland. He's urging a worse socialist takeover of healthcare than Obama. And you have people who call themselves Republicans and conservatives who are supporting him, and they praise him and they support him. It's unbelievable. This Tuesday is going to be the fourth presidential debate. Let's hope Ted Cruz stands out and makes a breakthrough. He's got to make a breakthrough soon. He's got to make a breakthrough soon, because if he allows Ben Carson and Donald Trump to win in Iowa and New Hampshire, it's over. That will kill his campaign. That's over. He's got to make a breakthrough fast. And I hope he does. I hope he does. I think he's running a pretty good campaign, but he's got to, in the debate, he's got to figure out a way to make a breakthrough like he did in the third debate. In the third debate, when he went after the news media, that was a breakthrough moment. He's got to do something like that, and it's got to be successful. He's got to do something like that in this upcoming debate. Let's hope and pray he does that. Oh, what a complete joke. What a complete joke. Look. If only we had a big enough megaphone, a big enough microphone to reach the American people and the people of Israel with this message, don't you think the situation would be a lot better? Don't you think we could wake a lot of people up with this message by bringing facts and truth and information to them? Of course we could. Of course we could. There's no doubt that we could. So let's all work together. Join with us. Help us. Help us get this out before it's too late. Help us get it out. You could do the following things to help us. Number one, we need your prayers. Please pray for our success. Pray also for Israel, and pray for Ted Cruz to win as well. We need your prayers. Prayer is very, very important. That's the first thing. Secondly, when you see us put Hebrew and or English videos up, even if they're in Hebrew and you don't understand Hebrew, excuse me, when you see us put these videos up, help us promote these videos. Do whatever you can to promote the videos on Facebook, on YouTube, wherever. Help us promote the videos. Third, become active. Check every day. Check our main pages. If you speak Hebrew, go to the Hebrew main page, hayamin.org. If you don't speak Hebrew, then go to the English main page, jtf.org, where Shlomo updates that page every day with magnificent articles. It's a great news page. Go to the English news page, jtf.org, comment, post things. That boosts us in the search engines. And check the page out every day. You're gonna see new news, facts, and information there every day that you won't get anywhere else. That's the third thing. And fourth, last but not least, of course, checks and money orders and cash donations sent to our post office box. Of course it makes a difference. Every donation makes a big difference. It makes us stronger. The stronger we are, the more people we can reach. I mean, it's so important and so critical now. If only we had the financial resources to do what we really must do, to reach the huge numbers of people who have to be reached, we'd be a mass movement in Israel within a short time. If we had a multi-million dollar budget, that's it. We'd be a mass movement within a short time. We would change history very, very quickly. But even if we don't have the millions, we have got to do what we can do with the resources we have. We're obligated to do that. And we do make a difference, because when people do see our message, it's convincing certain numbers of people. We reach thousands of people with our message every week, and it has an impact. The more the better. You can make a difference in determining how many people we reach. We need your financial support. God bless the great JTFers who do generously support us on a regular basis, who send checks and money orders and cash donations to the post office box on a regular basis. God bless you. And others, for convenience sake, may decide that they want to do it with their credit card online. They feel that's more convenient. That's just as good. No difference whatsoever for us. For us, it's no difference at all. If you want to do it with your credit card through PayPal, you just go to hayamin.org, which is the Hebrew main page. On hayamin.org, on top, there's a donate button on top in English. It says donate in English. Click on the donate button. In a couple of minutes, you can very conveniently help us. You can conveniently do something which is a blessed act. And believe me, if there's one thing that will help you, of course, it's not the only thing you should be doing in life, but if there's one thing that will help you on Yom HaDin, on the Day of Judgment, it's saying, I wasn't silent. When all of these threats and all of these terrible things were happening, I wasn't silent. I did try my best to help the group that is trying to reach people with the truth. That is important. That's very important. So, that's what we need. We need your help. We need to fight together as a team. And let's hope, God willing, that we can make a difference here, because it's a very critical time. And you see the challenges. This is going to be a very important week coming up. The debate on Tuesday night, a very important debate. I don't know what it's going to lead to. But any way you slice it, any way you look at it, our message has to get out there. Our message is essential. All right, let's go to our questions now from our great JTFers. And we start out with Yamach Shmoda Islam, who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, what exactly is schizophrenia? Can it be cured? Okay. Schizophrenia is a very serious mental illness. It is a mental illness. There are different symptoms. Schizophrenics sometimes imagine things. They hear voices. They see images of things that are just delusional, that don't really exist. So it's a really serious problem. Obviously, if somebody thinks they're hearing voices that are telling them to do certain things or have imaginary images, that's very, very dangerous. Very, very dangerous. About 1% of the population has schizophrenia. About 1%. So if you figure there are 330 million people in the United States, that's over 3 million people having it in the United States. In addition to that, a very high percentage of people with schizophrenia ultimately commit suicide. They ultimately kill themselves because they're so tormented by this terrible mental illness. So it's a very serious mental illness. I don't know if, in most cases, if it can be cured completely, but it can be treated. It can be treated, and many schizophrenics are able to live fairly normal lives with different type of treatments. Some of the treatments involve drugs, and some of the treatments, of course, involve therapy, involve going to therapists. So it's something that has to be treated, and it's something that has to be dealt with, but it shouldn't be ignored. It should not be ignored. It is a serious problem, and it's something that should be addressed. And let's hope, God willing, that we find the day that we find a way to cure this and other illnesses that afflict humanity. Let's hope that happens. Or let's even better that the Mashiach, that the Messiah should come, and then would be cured of all physical and mental ailments, because there'll be no more illnesses. In the Messianic era, when we have the final redemption. B'mhera b'yameinu, amen ken yehi ratzon, which means it should happen speedily in our day, and it should come to pass. Amen, it should come to pass. Okay, next we go to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, Shalom Chaim, what do you think about Veterans Day? Also, do you think that the U.S. should do more for the people who fight for the country, unquote. Well, Veterans Day, if it's honoring the veterans and people fought for the country, of course that's something which I think is important, is very important. And yes, of course, the country should be doing more for people who fought for the country. Absolutely. Absolutely. A country owes its soldiers that are willing to risk their lives. A country owes those soldiers at least the loyalty and the respect and the honor that they've earned by putting their lives on the line, by making these sacrifices. And that's something that should be done in terms of providing health, the health care that's needed. Some of these soldiers come back wounded, some of them very seriously wounded. All types of problems. And society does owe soldiers who fought to save the country, does owe them a deep debt of gratitude, no question about that. We go now to Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, 1. Why do most Catholics tend to vote Democrat even though their church opposes homosexuality and abortion, unquote? Well, first of all, Binyamin, you have to understand the majority of Catholics in America are not white, okay? Latinos and Catholics from third world countries are now the majority. Okay, once upon a time, the overwhelming majority of Catholics, Italian, Irish, and other Europeans, were white. That's not true anymore. The majority of American Catholics are not white. And we know that non-white minorities vote overwhelmingly Democrat. So you have to separate, because the majority of white Catholics do vote Republican. The majority of white, and there are many that don't also, which is also strange, but the majority of white Catholics do vote Republican. Binyamin now writes, 2. What do you think about the Secret Service paralyzing major cities when the Pope visited at taxpayer expense, unquote? Well, I'm not a fan of the Pope. I think this Pope is preaching socialism and Marxism. He's an anti-Semite. He's constantly knocking Israel and talking about so-called Palestinians, a nation that never existed, a people that never existed. and he's anti-American. And the things that he demands open borders, he demands mass immigration and allowing mass immigration from Muslim countries and third world countries into Western countries. The things that he's advocating are national suicide for Israel, for America, for the Western world. So I'm not a fan of this Pope. So, you know, so anything that's done on his behalf, I'm not happy with. And now Binyamin writes, and I quote, 3, discuss John Boehner resigning after his emotional moment with the Pope. Is the Pope responsible, unquote? I doubt it. I doubt it. John Boehner's emotional about everything, okay? He's someone who's a heavy drinker and a heavy smoker. He smoked so heavily that when Paul Ryan took over as speaker, and Paul Ryan's also an establishment disaster, but when Paul Ryan took over as House Speaker, he literally had a hard time staying in the office. It was so full of the smell of smoke, because John Boehner was an addicted chain smoker. It was just disgusting how much he smoked. And he's also someone who drinks heavily. But, you know, he cries all the time. He openly cries about all types of things. Meanwhile, he sold out all the conservative principles, did everything that Barack Hussein Obama, his buddy, asked him to do, stabbed all the Republicans and all the conservatives in the back, calls Ted Cruz names because Ted Cruz is loyal to his principles. John Boehner's a disgusting cockroach. I don't think it was because of the Pope. I think he decided to resign because he just had enough. He wasn't effective. He wasn't getting anywhere, and he just decided that he had enough. Binyamin now writes, 4, is Boehner a closet leftist, unquote? I don't think Boehner has any real political beliefs. I think he's a political prostitute, like most of the politicians in Washington. They don't have an ideology. They don't have a philosophy. The only thing they care about is advancing their own careers. And I think Boehner was one of those types who was bought off by the establishment, sold his soul to the devil a long time ago. Like 95% of the, at least 95% of the politicians in Washington have sold their soul to the devil. Okay, and that's an expression, by the way. I'm just using that in an expressive way. In other words, they decided that they're going to justify, maybe in their own minds they justify it. They say, well, I'm doing this and maybe it'll help in this way. Maybe they try to justify it, but everything they're doing is bad and a betrayal of all principles. That's at least 95% of the people in Washington. Thank you, Binyamin. And we go now to angry Chinese Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, "Fasten your seatbelt. Someone posted that Jenna can't keep your legs closed. Jameson is converting," unquote. Yeah, well, the reason she wants to have the so-called conversion, of course, completely phony. Well, first, let me tell you who she is. She's one of the biggest porn stars in the porn industry, ever in the porn industry. She has appeared in hundreds of porn flicks, the worst type of porn flicks. A lot of them lesbian porn, because she herself is an admitted lesbian or bisexual. She herself says she's bisexual, lesbian, so she's been in a lot of lesbian porn flicks, but she also is in all types of things, just all types of filthy smut that she's been involved in. Now, she has a really, really, what a history she has. She was raped when she was a teenager. She said she was raped twice when she was a teenager, which of course is terrible. We don't like to see people raped, but maybe that's why she became the type of person that she is, such an immoral person. Maybe that destroyed her mentally. It's possible. She also became a drug addict, and she checked into detox at least once. So she was a drug addict, she was a rape victim, she was in all the porn films, she calls herself bisexual or lesbian, and she's just a terrible, immoral person. She then put together companies, pornography companies, and she's made tens of millions of dollars. She personally has made tens of millions of dollars from pornography companies that distribute pornography. And so she is doing terrible damage to the soul of America. She's destroying people's lives. She's destroying people's souls, which is worse than murdering somebody. When you murder somebody, you destroy their body, but not necessarily their soul. When you destroy their soul, you're killing them both in this world and in the next world. Because even if you destroy their soul and they go on living, but they go on living as a corrupt, evil person, they're not really living. That's not really, in the Jewish view, that's not really living. So you're destroying them in this world and in the next world, because in the next world, they'll certainly have no place. They won't have eternal life in the next world if you destroy their soul. She destroys the souls of huge numbers of people with the massive pornography that she's been involved with. Her new porn, the reason she says she wants to convert, so-called convert, to Judaism, is because her new porn industry partner, the person who's distributing porn to millions of people with her, is an Israeli. His name is Biton. Lior Biton. That's his name, Lior Biton. Another evil, self-hating Israeli Jew. And they're now partners in the same business. And so he asked her, if they get married, he asked her to have this phony conversion. So that's why she wants to convert, because she wants to marry Lior Biton, this Israeli porn dealer. I mean, just disgusting beyond words. The last thing we need, let her convert to Islam, let them have her. The last thing we need is to have an animal like this. Thank you, angry Chinese Kahanist. We go now to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, "One, neo-Nazis calling themselves doctors attempt to emulate comic book villains." Okay. Well, I don't even know about this. I mean, this is new to me, that the neo-Nazis are attempting to emulate comic book villains. The only thing I can say is neo-Nazis are social misfits, aside from being evil, monstrous people who should be put to death. Anyone who's a Nazi should be put to death. Nazis have no right to live. Nazism is an ideology of mass murder. Mass murderers should be put to death. So they have no right to live. They have no right to breathe. They should be sent straight to the hell that they're going to go to in the next world, right away, as quickly as possible. But aside from all the from their wickedness and the fact that they deserve to be done, to have done to them everything that they want to do to innocent people, aside from that, Neo-Nazis are social misfits. And so they want to try to make their their sick antisocial pathology into something cool. And so they want to try to turn comic book villains or villainous people into something cool. They want to make evil cool. That's something Nazism tried to do. Nazism intended to make evil behavior cool. It's cool to be evil. It's cool to be cruel. It's cool to be sadistic. It's cool to be a Nazi monster. That's something that they that Hitler and the Nazis did do in World War II. And they convinced the German people that it's cool. The German people would brag about how many Jews they murdered, about how many babies. They used to take machine guns and machine gun the heads of babies, the Jewish babies, or throw Jewish babies live into ovens, or smash Jewish babies' heads against the walls in the concentration camps. And they would laugh. And they would laugh and show how cruel and brutal, and laugh at all the terrible things they were doing, all the suffering they were causing to innocent Jews. So they created a society and a culture where it was cool to be as cruel. The crueler you were, the cooler you were. That was Nazi. That's Nazism. That was one of the things the Nazis pushed for in Germany. And so now they're trying to take comic book villains in order to get young people involved in Nazism. They're trying to take social misfits, young social misfits in America, and say, oh, you can be like a comic book villain, and it's cool to be a comic book villain. The villains are really the good guys. Now, that's what they're trying to do. These are sick, evil, immoral, disgusting, vile people, and all of them should be put to death. Smash Islam now writes, 2, Russian plane crash. Okay. Well, obviously the Russian plane, it didn't crash. It was, I think it's pretty clear that it was a bomb. I'm almost sure that it was a bomb that went off from Islamic terrorists. Islamic terrorists planted a bomb on the plane. You know, first of all, anybody who flies Russian planes has to be crazy, because the Russians have the worst air traffic record, worse than third world countries. If you look at Aeroflot and the record of crashes and mishaps, I mean, it's completely insane. It's like playing Russian roulette. Flying a Russian plane or doing anything with the Russians is like playing Russian roulette. Completely reckless, negligent, the worst. Then on top of that, to go to Egypt, which is a country that is known to be teeming with terrorists, mass murderers, and lunatics, Islamic lunatics, it's also insane. So I'm not surprised this happened, but this is what happened. And all the Israeli Jewish animals and other Jewish animals that go to visit Egypt, and I'm speaking as a Jew whose family lived in that godforsaken filthy sewer called Egypt for hundreds of years. Anyone who goes to Egypt, in my opinion, doesn't deserve a lot of sympathy from me. Anyway, that's my commentary on the Russian plane crash. 3, Iron Sheik. Iron Sheik. How do you know about the things like this? You're too young to know about Iron Sheik. Iron Sheik's an old man now. I think he's in his 70s or 80s. Iron Sheik was an Iranian wrestler who played as an Iranian, as an Arab, as a Muslim in the wrestling industry. That's such a stupid. The whole thing is, I think, the whole thing with wrestling, it's so phony, it's so contrived. But he played as an Iranian or Arab sheik in all of these wrestling matches, and he became pretty famous, actually, many years ago. 3, Failed Messiah. Okay, there's a website, I think you're referring to the website. That's a website from anti-religious, extreme left-wing, self-hating Jews who put up a website to attack religious Jews and to mock Judaism. So they mock the Jewish faith and they mock Judaism. And they're anti-Israel, by the way, anti-Semitic and anti-Israel, and not just anti-Judaism, but anti-Jewish and anti-Israel, of course. I mean, it all goes together. It's all, you know, inevitably that's what's going to happen when you go against the Torah and go against Judaism. So they, you know, they defend, for instance, Jews who want to marry Muslims, and they condemn anybody who thinks there's something wrong with a Jew marrying a Muslim terrorist. They're completely against their own people. They're Jewish anti-Semites. 4, Chernobyl. Chernobyl is, for those of you, again, most of you were too young to remember this, but in 1986, there was a nuclear reactor in the Ukraine. Ukraine at that time was still part of the Soviet Union, the old Soviet Union. And there was an explosion, a catastrophe, that led to many, many deaths. Since then, many, many people have gotten cancer, and the very high rates of cancer because of the radiation that was released by the nuclear reactor. Again, this is Soviet and Russian and Ukrainian carelessness, recklessness, negligence. Yeah, this is just another example of, you know, the type of horrible situation you had in the former Soviet Union, and you still have that in Russia and Ukraine today. You still have, you know, when they had the athletes come for the Olympics, that the Russians were hosting the Olympics and spent so much money, they couldn't get clean water. There was no clean water to drink, because there's no clean water. They polluted and destroyed all the water. I mean, they can't even keep their water system clean. It's just, Russia's a disaster area. The Soviet Union was a disaster. Russia's a disaster. The Ukraine's a disaster. And Chernobyl was just one of these many episodes. Thousands and thousands of people, many, many thousands, developed the worst type of cancers, the worst type of diseases, because of a much, much higher rate of cancer in the vicinity of the Chernobyl nuclear explosion that took place in 1986, because huge amounts of nuclear radiation were released as a result of that explosion. And then 5, Monty Python. Monty Python was a British comedy group. Again, an old, this is going back years, many years ago. Monty Python was a British comedy group on British television. When I was a kid, it was very famous. I never thought they were funny. I mean, they were so celebrated and considered to be so hilarious and so classic and so idolized by so many people. And I don't know, I never thought they were funny. I never got it. I never understood it. What can I didn't think they were funny. What can I say? They're supposed to be comedians. They're supposed to be funny. I didn't see how, where they were funny. Thank you, Smash Islam. We go now to Nevsky, who writes, and I quote, "Hi, Chaim. What is your message for Christians and non-Muslims in dangerous Islamic countries like Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, Somalia, etc.? Thanks." My message for Christians and non-Muslims in Muslim countries is, what are you doing there? How can you live in a Muslim country? It's crazy. I don't understand it. I think it's dangerous even for Muslims to live in Muslim countries. But if you're not a Muslim and you're living in a majority Muslim country, you're crazy. You're crazy. How can you live there? How can you raise a family there? How can you operate a business there? I mean, they can cut your throat any minute there. This is a religion and a society and a culture of murder and intolerance of the worst type. So in my view, the only sane thing to do would be to get out. Thank you, Nevsky. We go now to Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Your opinion of the Nobel Peace Prize. Me personally, I think it's a joke," unquote. Oh, of course it's a joke. That's the Nobel Peace Prize. They gave the Nobel Peace Prize to the Arab Hitler Yasser Arafat, yimach shmo v'zichro shem reshayim yirkav, someone who murdered thousands of Israeli Jews. Someone, excuse me, who in the Lebanese Civil War, together with Mahmoud Abbas Abu Mazen, the current head of the PLO terrorists, supported by American and Israeli taxpayers, he and Abu Mazen Mahmoud Abbas were responsible for murdering 300,000 Lebanese Christians in the Lebanese Civil War. Hundreds of thousands of people this guy was responsible for murdering. And he was sworn to exterminate the whole Jewish people and exterminate non-Muslim infidels. He gets the Nobel Peace Prize. So, of course, it's worse than a joke, worse than a farce. It's the ultimate Orwellian outrage. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And next is Nekama, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, please discuss, 1, black entertainment television," unquote. Black entertainment television, BET. BET. Mm-hmm. Black entertainment television. It's like what you'd expect. The lowest quality, most degenerate, decadent garbage. Rap and hip-hop and all the filth and all the garbage and all the lowlifes of the world. That's what it is. And they have a channel that reaches, I don't know how many people, but it reaches huge numbers of the American population. Nekama now writes, 2, Dennis Ross. Dennis Ross, yimach shmo v'zichro shem reshayim yirkav, may the memory of this beast be obliterated and may the name of the wicked rot. Dennis Ross is a Jewish anti-Semite who served in the administrations of Jimmy Carter and George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush, all the Bushes, and Bill Clinton. And he obsessively was constantly urging every president, every administration, to pressure Israel to commit national suicide. That's his goal in life. To get Israel to commit national suicide. To get Israel to go back to the pre-1967 suicidal borders. That's his dream in life. So, he's the scum of the earth. 3. Moshe Ber Bek. And then in parenthesis, Drek. Well, you're certainly right. He certainly is Drek. Moshe Ber Bek, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro Shem R'Shem Yerkav. He's the so-called chief rabbi of Naturei Karta. Naturei Karta is the group of so-called Hasidic Jews who support genocide against their own people, who hate the Jewish, the worst Nazi Jew haters, the worst, I mean, literally Nazi Jew haters. This guy went to Iran to meet with Ahmadinejad and kissed Ahmadinejad and met with him and said, "We support Iran against Israel. We support what Iran is doing against Israel. They want Israel to be destroyed. They support Iran destroying Israel." This, and he calls himself a chief rabbi of Naturei Karta, this filth, this subhuman filth. Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. And 4, Nekama 4 writes, Imhotep Gary Bird. Mm-hmm. Okay. Imhotep, I don't know if it's pronounced Imhotep, whatever it is, but Gary Bird is the he's the radio talk show host for many years, since the 1960s, he's been a radio talk show host, a black radio talk show host, and he's with the hip-hop and rap and all the filth, and also an anti-Semite, the worst, I mean, just the worst, associated with the worst people, producing the worst decadent filth, just horrible, horrible. Thank you, Nekama. We go now to Black Sabbath, who writes, and I quote, "What's your opinion of these African dictators? 1, Robert Mugabe from Zimbabwe." Well, Robert Mugabe destroyed Zimbabwe. He's still the current dictator of Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe was Rhodesia when it was run by whites. And he took over right away after that. I think it was 1980. And Rhodesia, when it was run by whites, was a very wealthy, prosperous country because Africa has tremendous natural resources. He took over a country that had been a huge exporter of food, of grain, of all types of things, because they had tremendous, great agriculture, great natural resources in Rhodesia. When it became Zimbabwe, when the blacks took over and the whites, they destroyed the white, they had a white minority government there, they got the white minority government out. The country was starving. As soon as the blacks took over, the country was starving. This was a country that was wealthy, that was affluent. Mugabe and the other black racists that took over, they can't run anything. They don't know how to wipe their behinds. So, you know, he destroyed the country. Destroyed the country, like all of the black dictators do. 2, Mobutu Sese Seko from Zaire or the Congo. Okay, he changed the name to Zaire. Another one who destroyed the country, he died already. But I wish I remembered his whole name. He has some name, Zambu Zamba Banga Banga. You know, that's just the beginning of his name, Mobutu Sese Seko. He has a real long name that ends with Banga, with Ziba Numba Banga, you know, just completely, just absolute insanity, a monster who slaughtered his own people and starved his own people, and his own people were running around half naked, swinging from trees. I mean, this is what they do when they take over, when they run things. 3, Idi Amin Dada in Uganda. Okay, Idi Amin Dada slaughtered hundreds of thousands of his fellow Ugandans. Hundreds of thousands were killed when Idi Amin Dada was in charge of Uganda. And the Israelis helped Uganda a lot. because the Israeli Jews are nuts. So they helped Uganda, they wanted to help, they built their airport, and then they used the Ugandans used the airport to help, to allow Arab terrorists to hijack Israeli passengers and hold them hostage, if you recall, in Entebbe. The name of the airport was Entebbe. All built by Israelis. And the Israelis helped them, and so what do? They have this huge park in Uganda, the biggest park in Uganda, giant park. Idi Amin Dada called the park Hitler Park. Hitler Park, he called it, and he praised Hitler, and he praised the Holocaust. That's the great leader of Uganda. And finally, the fourth African dictator on Black Sabbath's list is Barack Hussein Obama in the United States. Very good, Black Sabbath, that's true. He is an African dictator, and we continue with his policies, we're going to become like Zimbabwe and Zaire and Uganda and all these countries. We're on our way. We're on our way to becoming just like them. Just like them. Thank you, Black Sabbath. And we go now to Uncle Bourbon, who writes, and I quote, "I know JTF has a Twitter account, but do you have your own? Do you keep up with Twitter trends?" Unquote. We have a Twitter account because one of our great JTFers created this Twitter account. No, I do not have my own Twitter account. I really should, but I do not have it, and I don't keep up with Twitter trends. I haven't had the time to get involved with Twitter, but Twitter is important, so it's something that people should go to the JTF Twitter account, should be active with the Twitter account. It's something that's very, very good and very, very positive for us. Absolutely. Thank you, Uncle Bourbon. Excuse me. And we go now to Gam Bashan Vegam Gilad, who writes, and I quote, "Hello, dear Chaim. Please speak about the recent rally against police officers and Quentin Tarantino calling them murderers. Thank you, Gam Bashan." Okay. Well, Quentin Tarantino is typical Hollywood and television industry leftist. I mean, he's super wealthy. He's from the elites. But he wants to be black. He's a white guy, two white parents, but he wants to be black. A lot of white people want to be black now. They actually want to be black. Because the cool thing now is to be black. Being white is being white is always put down now. And so he wants to turn himself into a black guy. You see these white people marching with Black Lives Matter, an organization that hates whites. And they march with Black Lives Matter, even though it's a racist organization that despises white people. Because there's certain sick wiggers who want desperately to be black. And this piece of garbage, this piece of subhuman garbage, is one of them. So, what can I say? Thank you, Gambashan. Next is Gimatria, who writes, and I quote, "Hello, Chaim. Who is the most evil member of Bagatz?" Okay, Bagatz is the acronym for the Israeli Supreme Court. Gimatria then writes, "I think Miriam the whore Naor actually wants to destroy Israel. Oh, is she ugly?" Unquote. I agree with you, she's ugly. I don't know who's the worst. I mean, they're so terrible. They are all so terrible. I don't know. I think they're almost tied for as bad as you could be. Almost all of them. It's a horrific, horrific court of the worst type of Judenrat Kapos, the worst type of Jewish anti-Semites you could ever come across. People who completely support all the enemies of their own people, and they are the true people running Israel. Because you can't pass, even if the Knesset passes a law, they declare the law illegal. They say that, no, we don't accept the law. They decide what laws are going to be allowed and not allowed, just like you have with the crazy Supreme Court in the United States, except here, everyone on the Bagatz, almost every single judge is pure evil. Pure evil. And it's because of Bibi Netanyahu, as I mentioned in my opening today, it's because of Bibi Netanyahu refusing to allow any reform of the selection process for judges to Bagatz. So you only have the extreme left, only the extreme left are selected as judges for Bagatz, for the Israeli Supreme Court. Thank you, Gimatria. And then we go to Kalman Ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, "Reb Chaim, Do you think that God has shifted his paradigm, so to speak, from chesed to din? Thank you. Okay, chesed means kindness, and din means judgment. So is God shifting from kindness to judgment? No, I don't think that's happened yet, because we're still breathing, and most of us don't deserve it. Most of us don't deserve it. So God is still acting very compassionately, very kindly, in a very kind way. But there's a limit. There's a limit. Because God is not only a God of love. He's a God of love and a God of compassion. And we know that he's a God of love because he created the world He didn't have to create the world. The mere fact that he created the world proves his tremendous love. Something that he absolutely did not have to do. He does it only because he wants to share good things with lesser beings. But he's also a God of truth and a God of justice. And so there's a limit. And that's why we got to wake people up fast before terrible things come. Eventually there will be deen, there will be judgment. That's why people have to wake up and we have to move things as quickly as we can. Thank you, Kalman Ben Menachem. And now we move on to EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Please discuss the Quilliam Foundation focuses on countering Islamism and its founder, Ma'ajid Nawaz, a former Islamist leader in Hizb ut Tahrir." Okay, the Quilliam Foundation is an anti-Israel, anti-Semitic group, and it's run by Muslims who claim that there are some Muslim extremists, but we're the Muslim moderates. Very bad group. Very bad group. This thing of Islamists and Islamism, that's nonsense. There's no such thing as Islamists and Islamism. It is Islam itself, the religion itself, that preaches terrorism. Muhammad preached terrorism. And the Quran, the whole Quran is terrorist. The whole Quran is filled with terrorism and filled with calls for mass murder. So it's the Quran and the Hadith and the whole, and all of Islamic theology, that is the root cause of the problem. Not that there's some breakaway group that's distorting Islam. On the contrary, if you said that Islam is a religion of peace, that would be distorting Islam. The people who say it, by the way, who say it's a religion of peace, are just lying. They know it isn't, but they're just, this is propaganda. The fact is, and this so-called foundation is anti-Israel. They've actually criticized the Jew-hating British government and have said the British government is not tough enough against Israel. Is not anti-Israel enough. That's how anti-Semitic this foundation is. So they should drop dead, together with all the people that support them. They should all drop dead. Yimach shmam b'zichram. Thank you, EB22. And we go to PMN, who writes, and I quote, "Can atheist Jews lead a more comfortable life during a given golden age in diaspora than in leftist, corrupt, high-tax Israel with constant wars?" Unquote. No. Because the reason they can't is because this world is not important. And you'll never be happy or satisfied in this world. Anyone who's an atheist, by the way, that's really someone you should pity. That's someone that should be pitied. Because they'll never be happy in this world. Never be happy in this world. And they won't have a place in the next world. So it's somebody that should be really, really pitied. This world is a world of testing. And if Jews violate the commandment to go and live in Israel, I don't care if they're atheists or what they call themselves, a Jew will be judged as a Jew. If he's an atheist, he's going to be punished for not believing in God. God doesn't ask that people believe. He commands that people believe. We're commanded to believe in God. We're commanded to follow his commandments. We're commanded to do what the Torah says. And so you never get a benefit. Let me explain it this way. You never get any benefit by going against what God commands you to do. Never. In the end, you're going to pay. In the end, you're going to pay a much bigger price than any seeming short-term benefit you get. You will be punished and pay a much bigger price in the end. And if you do what God commands you to do, even if it seems like it's against your short-term interests, in the end, you will be rewarded for that. And the reward will be bigger than any short-term suffering you may have for doing the right thing. You never, never, never gain by going against what God says. Never. In the end, you always will benefit and benefit tremendously by following God's laws. You will never gain anything by going against God. For instance, let's say you have a business and you have an opportunity in the business to do something dishonest or unethical and earn money in a way that goes against you. You're not allowed to do things that are dishonest and unethical and do bad things to people. You're not allowed to do that. But let's say you do something in the business and you wind up getting $1 million for it. You will pay for that $1 million so severely that in the end, even if you have the $1 million and you seemingly enjoy the $1 million, you seemingly have that, whatever you get out of that will be nothing compared to the consequences for the punishment you get for having done what you did. On the other hand, if you say, I'd love to have the $1 million and I'm very tempted, but you know, I can't do something wrong. I can't do something immoral. I have to do what's right. You, in the end, will benefit by that many, many times over. Many, many times over, you'll benefit by that. You never benefit by going against what God says. You always benefit by doing what you're supposed to do, by doing what God commands you to do. Living outside of Israel goes against God's commandments. And no one benefits by going against God's commandments. For a Jew, of course, Gentiles are not required to live in Israel. Gentiles are required to make this a better world in the countries in which they live in. So American Gentiles have to make America a better country, and so on. But Jews are required to live in Israel, and you never get the you will never benefit by going against what God commands us to do. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't be wise and you shouldn't prepare for your aliyah properly, which means you have to learn Hebrew and you have to make other preparations. You should prepare to have a successful aliyah. But you always will get the best results when you do what God says you're supposed to do. Always. Always. Okay, and even if you don't see it now, because obviously in this world so that we have free will, you don't see that right away. You don't see those results right away. But in the end, it will always turn out that way, if not in this world, then in the next. And the next world is very important, because the next world is our eternity, is our eternal destiny. It's more important than this world, even. Thank you, PMN. And we go to Hiram, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, do you think of, one, government encouragement of Muslim Nazis? Oh, I'm sorry. Let me read that over. Shalom, what do you think of, one, government encouragement of Muslim Nazis to adopt foster kids, unquote? Well, of course, I think it's terrible. I don't think Muslims should be encouraged to adopt kids. I think Muslims that adopt kids are going to brainwash them into believing in Islam, and that's, I consider that to be a form of child abuse. I think that's the worst thing you can do to a child. Two, Herman Munster's plan for cameras on Har HaBayit, unquote. Okay, Herman Munster, I think you're referring to Secretary of State John Kerry, who definitely is Herman, he's more Herman Munster than the original Herman Munster. I'm against cameras on Har HaBayit. Har HaBayit, the Temple Mount, belongs to us. There shouldn't have to be cameras there. John Kerry has no right to tell Israel what to do on Har HaBayit or anywhere else in any other situation. Nobody should be listening to John Kerry. And we should take back Har HaBayit, and we should take back our land from the foreign invaders who are destroying and polluting our land. That should be our policy. Thank you, Hiram. And now we go to Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, one, discuss Trump on Saturday Night Live, unquote. Well, he got a big boost, I think, because, you know, it has a huge audience. And they legitimize his candidacy. It's just, they're promoting him and promoting him and promoting him. And that's, it's unfortunate. It's a real problem because Republicans and conservatives and America are in for a terrible, terrible time. If this guy wins, and I think he may win the Republican nomination for president, very, very possible, and if that happens, oh, are we in trouble, God forbid. Oh, are we in trouble. First of all, Hillary Clinton will be the next president, in my opinion, if he gets the Republican nomination. And aside from that, even if by some miracle he did win the presidency, I think he would be a terrible president. Two, Carson's recent lies, unquote. Well, Dr. Dan, you read my mind as you often do. And I actually did discuss that in my opening. There's no question, there's no question you're 100% right that Ben Carson certainly has lied. And, you know, the things he wants to lie about, look at his mentality. That he hit his mother with a hammer, that he stabbed somebody, but the knife didn't go through because there was a belt buckle there to stop the knife from going through. What baloney. What else? What were some of the other things that he made up, some of the other stories that he made up? Just an endless parade of lies to create a false history. It just shows this entire guy is a bluff and a fraud. Three, Pollard's release for Iran deal. I don't know if the fact that Jonathan Pollard will be getting out, God willing, soon, and they're not allowing him to go to Israel, they're just releasing him from prison, which is terrible. But I don't know if the fact that he'll be getting out soon, if that's related to an attempt to try to get Jews to swallow and accept a nuclearized Iran. If it is, it's terrible. It's just as terrible. It doesn't matter. Because even as much as I want Pollard to be free, and as much as I want Pollard, as I want the best for Pollard, if the price for getting Pollard out is a nuclear holocaust for the Jewish people, God forbid, of course that's obscene. It's an obscenity. Okay. Four, Dvar Torah on Chaye Sarah. What's the next portion called? Okay. Yes, the portion we just read this Shabbat was Chaye Sarah, which means the lives of Sarah. Sarah, Imenus, Sarah is the mother of the Jewish people. And the next parasha, the next portion, is called Toldot. The next portion we're going to read next week is called Toldot. This week's portion, Chaye Sarah, is called The Lives of Sarah. And yet, it opens by telling us about her death. So why would they call it? Why would the Torah portion be called and start out with The Lives of Sarah when we're speaking about her death? And the answer, there are many answers that the rabbis give, that Chazal give us. One of them is that tzaddikim, even when they die, are still alive, are still called living. Because tzaddikim never die. Even when their bodies are in the grave, their souls are still alive in the next world. Because the soul lives on. The body dies. Yes, the body is buried in the grave and the body is no longer functional. But in this physical world. But their soul continues to live on. And they'll live forever and they will have eternal life. And when there's Techiyat HaMetim, when there's the resurrection of the dead, they'll come back to this world and they'll live in their bodies once again as well. So, righteous people, tzaddikim, they don't die. They don't really die. Death for them is a transition to some other level, but they don't die. They actually go to a place that's even better than this world. On the other hand, we're also taught the opposite is true, that for wicked people, even when they're alive, supposedly, in this world, they're really dead. Because even if you're eating and drinking and everything else and doing all the other things that people do in this world, living your life, and if you're not living for a real purpose, for the proper purpose, for the reason you were put into this world, you're like the walking dead. First of all, you have a death sentence hanging over you because you're going to die. I mean, every one of us is born, we're all going to die. And so you have a death sentence hanging over you, and then you have nothing to look forward to, you have nothing good waiting for you once you die. So you're like the living dead when you live a wicked life, but you are someone who has eternal life if you're righteous. If you're righteous, you have eternal life. If you're righteous, you never really die. That's one of the lessons of Chaye Sarah. That's one of the reasons why, even though it's speaking about her death, the name of the parasha, the name of the portion, the name of the Torah portion is The Lives of Sarah. That's one of the reasons for that. And there are all types of interpretations of why is it lives, why is it, why is it the life of Sarah, or why is it the life of Sarah? There are all types of reasons for that, but what's important to remember is, again, you know, this is life goes so fast in this world. There is a God, there is a judgment, and we've got to do what's right. We've got to do what's righteous, what's right, what's moral, and we've got to live the life that God commands us to live. If we do that, then we have good things waiting for us. You will always benefit by doing what God commands you to do in the end, even if it doesn't seem that way in the short term. And you will always pay a terrible price if, God forbid, you don't do what God commands you to do. That is the one real lesson of life. The one real lesson of life. If we believe that and live like that, then we're living our lives properly. Then we're living the proper life. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And I want to thank everybody for another program that, as usual, we very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, Shalom.